Well, good morning again. How are you guys? It's a bigger crowd for 9:30 than usual. You guys awake, or you just got drugged in the doors for other people's sake? I don't know. But my name is Sarah Bollinger, and it's a pleasure to be here with you guys this morning. I'm usually not in America, so just here for a couple weeks. I serve down at a ministry in Guatemala called Casa Bernabe, a children's home for about 115 kids that are orphaned or have dealt with trauma and different things. So anyway, it's always great to be able to come back here and to be home with family and church family for a little bit of time and share with you guys. So they gave me the stage today and to be able to share with you guys this next missing piece. So for the last few weeks, you guys have been going through a series on faith called Missing Pieces. And today's piece is called Excellence and Integrity. And it's really cool seeing the videos of you guys that are being confirmed just now and that are graduating and stepping into this next new adventure in your life and this next phase of life. And you have this opportunity to say, okay, you know, I'm moving forward to what's next. No matter if that's just like, okay, I'm owning my faith, or, you know, I'm on my own in adulthood, like I'm going off to college or whatever, or going into the workplace. Are you going to live a life of integrity and excellence as you do that? What's going to be that step as you move forward and move forward with Jesus? So this main verse that has been accompanying us through this series is John 10:10. And it says, "The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. But I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." You know, Satan, that's his process. He steals, he kills, he destroys. But Jesus, on the other hand, he says, I want you to have life and have it abundantly. So two very contrast things, right? But Satan's very real. You know, he's like a lion on the prowl. He's out there and he's alive. You know, he's stealing lives. He's killing lives and he's destroying lives. I'm sure in your own lives you see that. Or you see that with friends, or you see that in the pain and suffering and stuff that maybe you've gone through on your own. The devil's at work. Don't doubt it, all right? Don't move it as something that's just like, it's just circumstance. No, like, the devil's alive, and he wants you. But do you want to succumb to that? Or do you want this abundant life that God has and that he desires for you? Because you're his children, all right? So anyway, we're looking today at Matthew 24, 36 through 51, and also Matthew 25, 14 through 30. So those will be up here on the screen. But if you have your Bibles, feel free to open up and follow along with us. But I'm going to read you those two verses, and then we're going to dive into them and see what Matthew's really talking about as he writes these verses in these passages. So in these two chapters, 24 and 25 of Matthew, at the beginning of chapter 24, Jesus is with his disciples. And they ask him, you know, Jesus, like, when do we know, like, when the Son of Man is coming back? Because Jesus had talked to them about this before. He's like, you know, I'm going to be leaving you, but I'm going to return. You know, God's going to return one day. And they're like, okay, I want to be ready. I'm going to have my plan. You just tell me when so I can be prepared and do things well and be ready for that date, right? But, you know, this time, this section in my Bible is reading, it's like, there's not an hour. There's nothing specific about that time, is there? But we got to be ready. So anyway, let's read this, and then we're going to dive in. So Matthew 24. But concerning that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father only. For as were the days of Noah, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day when Noah entered the ark. And they were unaware until the flood came and swept them all away. So will be the coming of the Son of Man. When two men will be in the fields, one will be taken and one left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken and one left. Therefore, stay awake, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have left his house to be broken into. Therefore, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom his master has set over the household to give them their foods at the proper time? Blessed is a servant whom his master will find doing so when he comes. Truly I say to you, he will set him over all of his possessions. But if the wicked servant says to him, my master is delayed, and he begins to beat his fellow servants, and he eats and he drinks with the drunkards, the master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and then at an hour that he does not know. And he will cut him into pieces and put him with the hypocrites. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And then in Matthew 25:14, this is the parable of the talents. And it says, for it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to him his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and another 1, each according to his ability. Then he went away. He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 more talents. So also he who had 2 talents made 2 more. But he who had received just the 1 talent went, and he dug in the ground, and he hid his master's money. Now, after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 more, saying, Master, you delivered me these 5 talents. Here, I have made 5 more. His master said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. And he also, who had 2 talents, came forward saying, Master, you delivered me 2 talents here, and I have made 2 more. His master said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. He also, who had received just the 1 talent, came forward saying, Master, I knew that you were a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and I hid your talent in the ground. Here, have what is yours. But the master answered him, you wicked and slothful servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown, and I gathered where I've scattered no seed. Then you ought to have at least invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have at least what was my own interest. So take the talent from him and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. It's a lot to absorb all at once, isn't it? There's a lot happening in both of those passages. But the first thing I want to look at, last week if you were here, Pastor Craig, he talked about belief in action. That faith is belief in action. It's not something when you're just sitting still. There's an action to it. The same thing with these. You know, during Moses' time, or Noah's time, you know, there was a lot going on. There was just people living their everyday lives, and then bam, you know, the floods came, washed everything away, and Noah and his family, they're in the ark. Everybody else is gone, you know. They didn't expect the time. It's saying, you know, if there's a burglar, that you're not going to just sit around if, you know, the thief is going to come and steal. Like, you're going to be on watch. You're going to be alert. And the same thing with these guys with the talents. You know, the one with 2 talents and the one with 5 talents, it wasn't just like, oh, 5, boom, another 5. You know, it's not magical. He had to go, he had to invest it, you know, and be able to reap, you know, this that he's multiplied into the 10 talents. But what did the one do that just had the 1 talent? He dug a hole in the ground and he buried it there and said, okay, now I'll wait, sit patiently until the master comes back. Because I don't want to lose it, so I'm just going to stick it there in the ground. But no, it's... In our faith, it takes action. It takes that being alert, that being on watch. It takes stewarding. It's a process that we get to work with what God has set before us, what he's entrusted us with. They're not sitting around, you know? What does it mean to watch? Like, if you see the verb watch, you know, it's not the same as just to see. Like, you see it, it's just like one point in time, right, and you saw it. But watching... It's active. It's staying on alert. You're waiting to see, when are they going to come? When is that burglar? When is Satan on the prowl? He's going to come and steal from my life, right? We got to be alert. We got to be active. It's a spiritual preparation. It's active. And that's what's happening here. In both of these stories that Jesus is telling his disciples, he's saying, be ready. Have your spirit ready because I'm coming back. But you're not going to know when it's going to happen. It might be a long while, and we might say, oh, we got a while. I'm just going to sit back, watch some TV, eat some cookies, and Jesus will come in a while. But no, it says you got to be alert. You got to be on watch. You got to be ready. So are we actively preparing ourselves spiritually? What does that mean? You know, are you in the Word? Are you connected with the Father now? Or are you like, tomorrow, like, I have time. You know, today I'm busy. But Jesus isn't coming back for a while, so, you know, I'm good, right? No. We have to be actively preparing, actively using these resources that God has given us to be able to prepare for when he's coming back. He says, you know, we're not just to sit here stagnant. You know, what did he do in Genesis? You know, all the way from the time of Adam and Eve, he put them in the garden. You know, he created man and woman. And he says, you know, be fruitful, produce, you know, take care of the land. You know, we're not here just to sit back and just to take it all in. Jesus has put us here. God has put us here to work, to be active. And so in that too, you know, are we living in integrity and in excellence? Because if we're just sitting back, if we're lazy, if we're like that servant that just received the one talent and we just say, I'm just going to hold on to it, all that God's given me, and I'm not going to do anything with it, that's not integrity, you know? That's not excellence. You're not seeing anything come out of it. You know, are you living a passive life? Is everything just kind of going right by you? Are you living in the now of what's happening around you, of the people that God's put in your life? Are you making an impact in them? Is anybody making an impact in you? Are you just kind of like, oh, that's great, all that stuff that's out there? You know, no, like God has entrusted you with things. You know, even here on Sunday morning, the band, they're up here and they're leading with an excellence. This is something that's not for you guys, you know? They're not up here leading worship just for your to absorb and say, oh, good job. No, like they're worshiping for God. You know, those people back there in the classrooms right now, you know, I pray that they're serving with an excellence, that they're pouring into these children's lives with an excellence, with an integrity, that I get to have this child here with me for an hour on Sunday mornings. I want to pour into their lives. I want to teach them about Jesus. Ray out mowing the lawn. I was over here yesterday afternoon and he's out mowing. And it looks so gorgeous out there today, doesn't it? That we're just able to come into this place and say, this is presentable for the God of the universe. That's excellence. Even back there in the nursery, or you moms, when you're at home, you can change diapers in excellence, right? Matthew 25:40 says, the king will say, what you've done for the least of these, you've done it for me. So even if it's small, even if it's taking out the trash, even if it's wiping a baby's butt, it can be done for the glory of God. All right, mowing the lawn, planting flowers. Is there excellence in it? Are you doing it in excellence? Are you doing it passively? And just saying, I'm just getting it done. Or are you just sitting back and saying, you know, I'm just going to sit in my comfort. I'm going to sit in these resources that God has given me. Because they're mine. And I just want to consume and consume and consume. No. God didn't make us to be just consumers. It's a lot of what the American culture around us tells us to do, doesn't it? But that's not God's ideal of why he put you here. All right? So, in English, what do we think of as a talent? It's like a natural ability, right? These talents that you have. Well, in the Greek, the word, it comes from talenton. And this is a sum of money. So, you know, in this passage, it's not just saying, oh, they were, you know, given these talents. Like, no, it was, they given him, like, his possessions, his inheritance, right? What this master owned in these lumps of money. And five talents was about $12,000. So it was a big amount of money. But it also says, too, that it was an amount of money depending on his ability. Because it says, to the one he had given five talents, to another two, and to another one, each according to his ability. So the master hadn't given this one guy five talents thinking, oh, like, he'll probably just, you know, spend it all or lose it and, you know, whatever. No, like, he trusted him, and based on what he'd seen in the past, he'd given this guy five talents, you know, $12,000, because he knew, like, he's going to steward it well, and I expect a lot out of him. He's faithful. He's a faithful servant. The same with the one he given 2 talents. He's like, I trust him with these 2. And the same with 1. Like, this is due to his abilities. This is what I can trust him with. You know, we're not all the same. And God's not throwing a whole lot more on us than we can take on. He knows our abilities. And oftentimes, we're able to grow in those abilities as well. But if you're like the one who just received 1 talent, and you say, I'm kind of fearful, I'm kind of worried, and I don't know how to manage this well, what happened to it at the end? They gave it to the one who then had 10, right? So with our own talents, with our own abilities, what has God given you? What has God given you? He's given us all talents, right? He's given us all these resources that we're able to steward. All different to each and every one of us. It's all unique. But he's given us finances. He gives us time. He gives us our family, a home, gifts, talents, all of these things, right? It's a lot of stuff to be able to steward. How are you using yours? You know, for the one guy that buried his talent, it was actually not uncommon for that day. If you look back at Matthew 13, it said that there's a hidden treasure in a field, and that guy had ended up going and he bought that treasure, or he bought the field because he found this large treasure. And so the guy wasn't out of his cultural norm to have this talent and think, oh, I can hide it and then it'll be safe and that'll be okay. Because I don't want to make the master mad, like I don't want to lose it, or anything like that, right? But isn't that the same case for us? Maybe it's like culturally acceptable for some of the things we do sometimes, but is it biblically acceptable? Because what did the master say to him when he came back? He's like, you knew my character. You knew how I invest. You knew where I reap and what I sow. Could you not have at least gotten interest out of it? You know, and this guy, he's like, oh, I can just bury it. It'll be okay, right? At least I'll have that to give back. I'm not going to lose it. So in our own lives, you know, is it normal just to be able to hold on to our own finances and just say, this is mine, you know, I gotta plan for retirement, you know, I gotta plan for my kids' college fund, I gotta plan for this. That's what the whole world and all these money people are telling you, right? I bet. What about, you know, putting your kids in sports and everything? Like, oh, they gotta be involved, they gotta play soccer and, you know, swim and be in Boy Scouts and everything like that. They got to stay busy. Like, otherwise, they're not going to have any friends. And they're also not going to have any extracurriculars because, you know, 15 years down the road when they're going off to college, like, they're not going to get in. And, you know, if they're not playing and playing and playing, like, they're not going to get that scholarship. You know, none of these things are bad, right? Saving's not bad. You know, being involved, being active in sports isn't something that's bad. Like, they're all things that God has created and created for good. But what if we could get consumed with the mindset that this is my focus? You know, I'm not focusing on right now of who I could be blessing with the funds and the resources that God has given me. Or with my kids, you know, we could be inviting other kids to live life with us in the time that we have available. These kids down the street that they don't go to church, they don't know Jesus, but we're too busy. We don't have time to be able to tell them about Jesus because we got to focus on this, you know. But what is this saying? We don't know when Jesus is coming back. Are you spiritually preparing yourselves? You as parents, are you spiritually preparing your children? Because it's coming for all of us, right? Where are our eyes set? Where are our eyes set? Where is our eternal focus? Maybe we're not. Maybe we're just on right now. Maybe just in this little square is just stressing me out and I can't even see forward. Let it go. God's got your life. You know, maybe there's these cultural norms, but does it make it acceptable to God? Lots of things to think about, right? You know, maybe it's I advance in my job. Like, that's the way to move up, right? You get out of college, get into the workforce, you know, then you're looking for where can I move up? You know, when can I get that raise? And you keep moving up the whole way. But once, after, you know, you get married, you have kids, and your job is consuming all of your time, you have no time to spend with your kids, is that helping your kids out any? You know, maybe the job itself isn't something bad, but if you're focusing all your time on that, maybe there's things that you need to prune out of your life that's saying, maybe it's not bad, but I can't be fruitful if I'm holding on to it. I can't see that my kids' focuses are in eternity and spirituality as well and on Jesus if I'm never telling them that. Because if you're not, they're not going to know it. Are you spending the time investing in that? Are you investing in the kingdom? Are you looking for integrity and excellence of the world? Because there's that. You know, at your workplace, it might say, we are a place of excellence. At your school, we are a school of excellence. You know, you are an excellent student. You get straight A's, right? You get the raise. You're an excellent employee. But what is excellence to God? What's excellence to God? Are you focusing on Him? Where's your vision? Is it right here, right now, right here on my stuff and my money and on my house? And I want to get that bigger house. Or is it, it doesn't have to be about that because that's just going to waste away. Where's your treasure? The Bible says you can't have two masters. You can only have one. So where are you, what are you doing with your resources, with your finances, with your family? Are you getting captured by the world? Or are you letting God? Are you being faithful to Him and being that faithful servant where God's going to say, well done, my good and faithful servant? Because we can hear that from the world. We can hear those accolades. Your boss says, good job. Keep going. Working at it. Or your parents say, yes, keep going. Keep going. You're doing great. But those things are going to fade away. The eternal prize is what's going to last forever. And it's hearing the Lord say, well done, my good and faithful servant. Matthew 13:12 says, for the one who has, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. And I think that's so true. You know, if we have things, but we're really not using them for the kingdom, we're really not stewarding them well, or if we're like that one lazy guy that has fear just crippling him, he was held so tight and thinking, oh, no, you know? And at the end, the master's like, nope, I'm giving your talent to the guy that has 10, right? So is fear, is worry, is laziness, is it blame shifting? Are we just out of our comfort zone? Is it excuses that's keeping us from stewarding well, from being faithful servants of the Lord? What's holding you back? What are those things that you need to just chop off? You know, you need to say, God, the devil's stealing my joy, right? Don't let him. You have control of your life, you know, and you have a God that cares about you. Is he enough? Do you trust him to say, okay, I'm going to give you a piece of this and I don't know what's going to happen? Or I'm going to give you my family. I'm going to give you my marriage. I'm going to give you my friendships because you, Lord, can manage them so much better than I can myself. Or are we saying, I'm just going to hold on tight, you know, and I don't want to let it go. No, let it go. The Lord over your house, the Lord over your life can handle it so much better than you can do it on your own. Okay? Avoid making excuses for what God has called you to. It's easy to make those excuses, right? Say, oh, once I graduate, you know, you guys, maybe it's like, oh, I've graduated, but I got to get to college first and get done, get my bachelor's degree, and then, you know, then I can really serve the Lord. Then I'll have resources to be able to, you know, invest in other people. I'll be able to invest in the kingdom. You know, maybe it's just like, oh, when I get married, you know, then we'll be better. Maybe it's once I hit retirement because I'm too busy right now and working, you know, and saving up for then. It's not until retirement that I can really do that. Or, you know, right now, like, I can't, like, but once I have, you know, that new job, then it'll be okay. We can make excuses, right? You know, what could I say about my life right now? Well, you know, once I move back to America and I have these other comforts around me, that's when then I can really invest in the kingdom. Or maybe it's once I'm married, then I can invest better. Because right now I'm just on my own. What can I do by myself? Or maybe I'm too young. You know, once I'm older, then I'll have more of an influence, and then I'll really be able to impact people's lives. Or right now, I literally, like, in the building I live in, I, like, have a room and I share it with another girl. So I have, like, half a room. You know, once I have a house, then I'll really be able to, like, invite people into life, to be able to have coffee and tea together and talk and disciple them. But right now, with half a room, like, I can't. No. God says now. Now. It's not about tomorrow, because we don't know when that's going to come. We don't know when the master's going to come back. It's not about later down the road when I have a master's degree, maybe. Then, you know, I'll have, like, the intellectualness to be able to know more and to do more and to get a better job. And maybe that one day when I get a paycheck, because right now I really don't. You know, I don't have steady finances. I could never get a loan right now. I don't need one. But, you know, I have to raise my own support working in Guatemala. And some months it's this amount that comes in, and other months it's this. And then you never know. And so what's that going to look like? What, I don't know. How can I invest in the kingdom right now? It's fearful. Does it need to be fearful? Do I need to feel bound? Because that's where God has me right now? No. You will experience so much joy investing in people's lives where you are at right now with what he's given you, with the finances that you have. Because God's in control of that too. He's not going to let you fall. All right? It doesn't take this big level of education. It's amazing in Guatemala, like the majority of the people I work with, like none of them, the majority of them have not gone to college. Yet they are investing in an incredible way in the way that they're serving God in their life right now, where they have taken their call and they're running with it and saying, God, you're big. God, I'm after you. I'm spiritually prepared because I don't know what's going to come. I could get these accolades of the world, but it's just going to fall short. My vision's on you, God. There's a book that Francis Chan has written that I've read. And Francis Chan is another pastor, and he has a church out in California, and he's written multiple books. But in it, he talks about his wife's grandmother named Clara. And so he says, Grandma Clara is just an incredible woman that just has just such a heart for the Lord. And she just goes to bed each night just filled with, you know, I get to wake up in the morning and I get to just spend time with Jesus. You know, I get to wake up and just be in his presence and spend time with him. And it's just going to be so rich. And she just lives with that eternal focus of just spending that time with Jesus until she gets to see him face to face. And he says that one day they went out to a movie or a play or something, and he'd asked her, like, you know, are you enjoying it? And, you know, it was good content, no bad words or anything like that. And she's like, well, I don't know that I really want to be here. And he's like, really? Why? And he's like, she's like, well, I don't know that this is where I want to be when Jesus comes back. Like, if he finds me and I'm just sitting here when he comes back, like, I'd rather be serving someone. And so I'm reading this book, and I'm like, wow, like, it makes me feel like I should never go to a movie again. Like, but that's not the point. But, you know, do we live with this expectation of Jesus is coming back and it's real? It's real. Are we ready? What are we working towards right now? Are we looking towards Jesus? You know, for those of you that are confirmed today, you guys have just made that decision on your own to say, this faith is mine. Jesus, you're my God, right? Where are you going to walk forward right now? Because it's not your parents' faith anymore. It's not them just bringing you to church. It's yours. How are you guys going to use your resources for the kingdom? Because even though they may seem few and small right now, God's given you your time. He's given you other resources to be able to invest in the kingdom. Just hearing some of you guys that are going off, you're going to be doing mission right now. Maybe before college, maybe in just a break right now, but just serving. You have the eternal focus, right? For those graduating, you know, I want to get plugged into Christian community. I want to be able to invest in these people that I encounter now. We have community group signups out there. And with that, the accountability of it all, it's going to be so much easier in community. Because the devil can steal and kill and destroy your life. But if you show up there in your community, they're going to lift you up. And they're going to pray over you. And they're going to walk alongside of you. So if you're not in a community group already, go check out one of those tables out there. Because it's so much richer when you're in it together. And you're all seeking after the Lord. It gives us a focus because it's about today and it's about now. Hebrews 12, 1 through 2 says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God." He's the founder and the perfecter of our faith. Another version says he initiates and perfects our faith. Jesus is the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. We're not on it alone because our faith is going to fall short. It's going to be small, but God's going to perfect it. We got to put our eyes on the eternal prize. Because remember, the applause of the world's going to fade away. But we need to look to his applause, to him there at the finish line, saying, "Well done, good and faithful servant." Run ahead. But why? Why should we follow Jesus? Maybe you're in here for the first time, hearing the gospel, and you're thinking, sounds kind of hard. I got to leave all my comforts aside and give up my resources and just kind of feeling bitter. Well, yeah, why do we do it? Is it because of like what happened at the end of these two passages? There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. It's kind of scary. Is it like, well, I don't want that, so I better run after Jesus? Or maybe it's just like, oh, I got to fix my eyes on the prize. I got to fix my eyes on the finish line because if I turn around, maybe something's going to bite me in the butt. No. No. There's a joy that comes only from Jesus. You know, even your resources and everything that you have, sometimes they just fade away. You might lose a job and it just disappears. Why should you follow Jesus? He has direction. The treasure that he gives is worth so much more than all this stuff on the earth. It's not about fear. It's not about worry. It's not about the weeping and the gnashing of teeth. He pulls all the pieces of our life together in his perfect harmony that can only come from him. I can't perfect myself, and I can't always keep the faith. But God sent his Holy Spirit to live inside of me. He says that he gives me his power. I'm not alone. He brings us greater joy than the world could ever imagine. Sometimes with these things, you know, of the world, they bring us happiness that lasts for a while. But true joy comes only from him. And everything comes together when we're putting him first. Matthew 6 says, "Seek first the kingdom of God, and everything else will be added to it." Everything else will be added to it. Don't live in fear. Don't live in laziness. Don't live just in the comforts of this life, because God gave you these things and he's blessed us with all of these resources because they're good. But don't be consumed by them. Focus your eyes on the prize and be alert and expectant because he's coming back and it's going to be beautiful. Wait for that voice, that same voice that created the whole world, that when we arrive and see our master's face, he's going to say, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." Listen for that voice, not from all these other ones that are distracting around you, right? God, we lay our lives before you, and I just pray for every heart in this room. If their lives are being hindered at this time because of broken relationships, broken marriages, pain, suffering that's brought on by Satan just stealing what is in our hearts and in this world, God, you're constant. And your love and desire for our lives is that we would have abundance. Lord, want you to lord over our lives, because you can manage it so much better than we could imagine on our own. Let us live freely and expectant, because we don't know when you're coming back, Lord, but let us live with an eternal perspective, with our eyes on the prize, knowing that your will is good and that you are good, and you fill our lives with grace and a mercy and a love that cannot come from anything that this world has to offer. God, we praise your name, and I just pray that there's hearts in this room that are kind of on the border, Lord, that they would say, okay, I give up trying on my own. Let your power flow into my life, and let your will be done. Lord, we pray this all in the great name of Jesus.